Meeting to order. Today is Friday, April 26th. It is 3:29. Before we begin, I'd like to introduce my committee aide, Deneen Tuck, and thank Sophia Tenney, our current House Labor and Commerce Secretary, and Eileen Keim, the LIO moderator. This time, I want to ask everybody to silence their electronic devices. Present today are Representative Hannon, Representative Tallarico, Representative Stutes, and myself, Co-Chair Ledoux, and Representative Wong is excused, and Representative Fields is excused. So we do have a quorum to conduct business. We have several items on the agenda today. I doubt that we're going to get to all of them, but we're going to start at House Bill 78, Insurer and Group Insurance Disclosure, and we have Lori Wing Heyer on online, and she is available to answer any questions. And amendments were due. In my office no later than 5 p.m. yesterday. No amendments were received. I'd like to note that Representative Reback has joined us. And at ease. So are there any questions from the committee before we go into public testimony on this bill? Well, seeing no questions, then I would like to open up public testimony on HB 78. And it looks like we have from the LIO, Charles McKee. Mr. McKee, are you online?
Yes.
And would you like to identify yourself for the record and tell us with whom you're affiliated, and then you may proceed with your testimony?
I'm affiliated with myself and the documented impact of the Anchorage Times 1983 by the state of Alaska defrauding my name, libel, and slandered. So, that being said, that my name's Charles McKee, and they had to do a retraction 7 days later.
Mr. McKee, we're talking about an insurance bill right now. Do you have any?
That's what I turned in. It's 18 pages of a dissertation on insurance. And it's a subjugated insurance policy that we all have based on the birth certificate. And the state is the one that subjugated, or I should say the corporation, the state of Alaska, has subjugated the account. So when you're looking for this...
Okay, Mr. McKee, I think that you're a little bit not exactly focused on this particular bill that we have before us today. So if you have something particular to say about this particular bill, not the history or anything like that, please state it. If not, I'm going to ask you.
I've never received the bill. They didn't have one when I came in an hour ago. So I've never seen the bill. I just see what's on the agenda for the LIO.
Okay.
So, it's not my fault that nobody handed me a bill that talks about the disclosure. I'm talking about disclosure here. And if you can't accept my 18 pages turned in, it is still disclose insurance and the conduct of the sharing between the corporation, the state of Alaska, and the insurance company, private company.
All right. Mr. McKee, if you would like to send your 18 pages to the committee, that would be great, but nobody has seen it here. Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. McKee. Appreciate it. So is there anyone else online or in the room that would like to testify about this bill? All right. Seeing or hearing no testimony, I am going to close public testimony. Is there any questions, discussion, or comments about this bill from the committee? And again, Lori Wingheyer is online to answer any questions. All right. Well, what is the will of the committee?
Representative Ledoux, I would like to make a motion. I move House Bill 78, Insurer and Group Insurance Disclosure, version 31-GH1953/A, from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Hearing and seeing no objections, that bill passes from committee. And while we get on to our second item of business, we can... At ease, can you, is that thing? So we'll pass around the bill folder while we get on to our second item of business. And this is our first hearing on House Bill 57. And I see you there in the audience, Representative Wilson, and we're going to hear your bill now. So to begin with, we have a proposed committee substitute before us. So Representative Stutz, do you have a motion on that?
I do, Chair Ledoux. Thank you. I move that the Labor and Commerce Committee adopt the committee substitute for House Bill 57, work order number 31-LS0271/S, as a working document.
Okay, seeing no objections, that is going to be our working document. And so, Representative Wilson, would you like to present your bill? And I see Barbara back there. Would you like to bring her up to the table, too?
I think I could do this one solo, but I will definitely need help on the next one.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Representative Tammy Wilson. I represent North Pole District 3. And before you today, is HB 57. In Fairbanks, where the sun never sets in the summer, you can go by the soccer field watching all ages enjoy the sport. Fairbanks Youth Soccer Association adjusted their entire program structure to ensure that games would be finished by 9 p.m. and thus no young employees, 14 or 15-year-olds, would be scheduled beyond that point. However, after continued growth, it has become nearly impossible to complete all the league games that are played in one central location. HB 57 would extend the time of day from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. that youth 14 or 15 years of age can perform work from June 1st until the first Monday in September if they are not enrolled in a school term. This expansion of time does not alter the number of hours in a day or week the youth can work. It simply allows them to work until 10 p.m. during the summer. And before you and the changes that you have, this particular bill kind of had an adjustment done in the last committee, which would have extended the hours to 4 a.m., 5 a.m. to 4 a.m., not just 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Since then, Madam Chair, I have learned a lot of things about the Fair Labor Standards Act and had to actually call Washington, D.C. with the help of Senator Sullivan's office to find out exactly, you know, what rules that we were breaking. So currently, federal law is 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. during the school year and 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. During the summertime. Somewhere back in time, we changed it as a state law from 5 a.m. to 7 p.m. and 5 a.m. to 9 p.m. Then I started talking to them about exactly what waiver there would have to be able to basically break federal law. Nobody had ever heard of whatever waiver I was talking about. So I know they're really doing important things in Washington, D.C., but this is really important to our soccer folks. So when I got them on the phone and I explained that they pay fees to the soccer group to play soccer, to pay referees, there's no commerce going on, I found out that hiring 14 or 15-year-olds is not against the Fair Labor Standards Act, and they could do that, and they could actually do it till 10 p.m. without any kind of waiver, no federal changes. Great, right? Not a problem. Well, there's still one problem because they would be breaking state law. Because we are the ones now that make it till 9 p.m., not the federal law. So I had them on the phone because in the last committee, we have charter groups that utilize, want to utilize possibly 14 or 15-year-olds to help with the gear and getting in on the boat, and one of the representatives wanted to change the 5 a.m. to 4 a.m., and I asked whether that would be a problem, and the answer was yes. Not just the 4 a.m. was a problem, because that's commerce, this is private business, interchanging money not just for one instance like the soccer fields would be doing, and this would also be baseball, anybody who's paying fees for a very specific purpose, it's not commerce. And they told me that they could not see any reason why we would have 14 and 15-year-olds working at 5 a.m., much less 4 a.m. And I said, well, they might be delivering newspapers. Well, guess what? Newspapers are an exemption. You can do newspaper delivery, I guess, as early as you want or as late as you want. And they recommended to us that we would go back to the 7 a.m., and that is what's before you in the committee substitute. And what we are now proposing is that it would be 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. during the school year and 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. when it's in the summertime. That way we are not breaking any kind of our federal laws within it. Now, between 9 and 10 p.m., each organization would have to make sure that they are compliant with the Fair Labor Standards Act because, again, if it's commerce, this 10 p.m. we're including right now would not be allowed in those types of situations. But for our soccer folks, it works just great. Thank you, Madam Chair.
So, does anybody have any questions right now for Representative Wilson? Representative Hannon.
Thank you, through the chair. So let me just confirm that between the first committee substitute and the work version that we have adopted, and on page 2 where it deletes all the reference to federal exemption sought, your understanding is none of that is necessary because we are now just talking about state child labor restrictions.
Representative Hannon, through the chair, you are absolutely correct.
Okay. And then I think I'll have some questions for the department. I assume department.
They are here.
They are here. Okay. Anybody else have any questions for Representative Wilson? Okay, so who is here from the department that might be able to answer some questions?
Gray Mitchell, the Director of Workers' Compensation for Department of Labor and Workforce Development, here to answer questions.
Representative Hannon.
Thank you, through the chair. And I understand, you know, Representative Wilson said a difference between commerce, and I'm not sure what the other category she would be describing as the soccer field referees or other sports, whether that's, you know, but not being commerce. And I guess as I read the bill draft, I'm thinking of an employer who would look at this, and that's not spoken to in those sections. So from the Department of Labor's perspective, because 14 and 15-year-olds typically need work permits, so they've contacted the Department of Labor to get their youth work permit and said, I want to hire a kid to work at my lodge, and I would read this to say, yep, they can work there till 10 p.m. Does the Department of Labor view any concern with no distinction between the kinds of labor categories being spelled out in this extension of law, hours?
Through the chair, Representative Hannan, if I understand your question correctly, no, we wouldn't have concerns with that. Essentially, that's the way it is now. The state has departed from the Fair Labor Standards Act and allowed a more generous schedule of hours, and employers are expected to understand that there's differences between state and federal law. We do try to make employers aware of that through educational materials that we provide, and one of those documents is the work permit, and on the back side of the work permit there's listings of the differences between state and federal law. And it's designed to provide that kind of information, but it's up to that employer to know that there's tests for coverage under the Fair Labor Standards Act, an enterprise coverage test and an individual test, and they do relate to how much revenue that employer produces over the year and whether or not their individual employees handle goods that travel in interstate commerce or engaged in interstate commerce.
Follow up. Okay, so my scenario is I got a 14-year-old working as a referee at the soccer field. They're legal. But I got a kid who's 15 working the concession stand who's 15. Are they allowed? And I, as the soccer overseer, needs to be able to distinguish that the referee is okay because it's not direct commerce, but the kid working in the concession stand is not allowed to work till 10 because that's commerce.
Through the chair, Representative Hanan. It's a complicated question. It depends on what they're selling.
Not beer.
If they were selling locally grown products with cash transactions, then there would be no problem. If they were selling things that had traveled in interstate commerce and were using credit card transactions that involve interstate transactions, then they would be covered.
Okay, one more question.
Go ahead.
I guess in my mind, my heartburn with this is placing onto a small community recreation center where they got, I can authorize my 15-year-olds to do this task, but I can't have them do this other task. And I'm concerned that we make it so complicated that you now have to have a labor expert working in your HR office, because why can't I schedule the 15-year-old in the concession stand, but I can schedule them to work on the fields? And we know all across Alaska, basically work until 10 p.m. in the summer, it's still broad daylight. So this exemption that Representative Wilson is seeking is for a very narrow category of employers till 10 p.m. If we did that for all of our work permits for youth in the summer, that's where we get into trouble with federal law?
Through the chair, the state wouldn't necessarily be in trouble. The states are allowed to vary their requirements from the Fair Labor Standards Act. Many states have minimum wages, for example, that are lower than the federal minimum wage, and that's not a violation of federal law. So it's not that the state would be in trouble. The employer that is employing the minor could be in violation of federal law, and that would put them in peril with federal enforcement agents if they found them. The state wouldn't be taking action related to that, so it really doesn't involve us. As state regulators per se.
Through the chair. Well, I'm not really concerned about the state. I'm concerned about the small employer who has employed a variety of 15-year-olds, and one category is legal and one category isn't. So how do we allow all these 15-year-olds to work till 10 p.m.?
Through the chair, the only way you could do it would be to change the federal law.
So how active are these federal regulators on soccer fields and like premises?
Madam Chair, I don't believe that is a high priority for them. My guess is that they're primarily complaint-oriented, and they're looking for hazardous types of occupations, kids who are being taken advantage of, and, dangerous work environments, that kind of thing. But yeah, I wouldn't see this as being a high priority for them, and probably could even be a little bit embarrassing if they took enforcement action.
Thank you. Do we have any further questions? Okay, any committee comments? Well then, amendments are due no later than Wednesday, May 1st, and Representative Wilson, can you come back to the table, and I guess this time with your aide, Barbara Barnes. And this is for our third item on the agenda, which is HB 104, and that is mortgage loan originator licensing. And this is our first hearing on HB 104. It's my understanding that Patrice Wonks, Director with Commerce, Community, and Economic Development, Banking and Securities Department, is available online. And again, we have a proposed committee substitute before us. Representative Stutes.
Thank you, Chair Ledoux. I move that the Labor and Commerce Committee adopt the committee substitute for House Bill 104, Work Order Number 31-LS0275/S, as a working document.
Seeing no objections, it is now adopted as our working document. Representative Wilson, would you like to identify yourself for the record, introduce your aide, and then you can present the committee substitute for the bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's nice to be back. My name is Representative Tammy Wilson from North Pole District 3, and I have my aide, Barbara Barnes, here with me to help me with the tough questions that Representative Hannon may have. Currently, Alaska law allows for a person to sell or finance their own home, their second home, or their vacation home if it is not considered an income property. Exceptions apply for seller financing to a family member. Interior and more rural community property owners have parcels with trailers or cabins on them, some with water and electric, some without. These types of properties are historically difficult to finance through the traditional mortgage process, and many times lenders require more money down, shorter loan terms, higher interest rates, and in some cases will not finance them at all. Those wishing to take on the responsibility of home ownership and establish roots in the community may find for many reasons that they do not qualify for a traditional mortgage. Seller financing is another tool that can be utilized to make it affordable for one to realize their dream of having a place they can finally call their home. Seller financing is a reasonable and practical option for both sellers and buyers of these type of properties. HB 104 would give more opportunity for the dream of home ownership to those who might not otherwise realize it. Madam Chair, I was shocked when I had a constituent come to me to find out that if you rent a place for even a day, and maybe those who are renting want to buy it now and you want to get out of it, you can't sell or finance it just because it was rental property. However, a lot of people in the state are doing it because I think, like I, did not realize that you could not do such a thing, because you could do it for your own home, for your second home, your vacation home, but not for income property. So I see this bill really fixing what a lot of people are already doing, which, you know, may be right or wrong, but there really are instances where you have trailers that you really can't even finance anymore through a traditional mortgage. Or you may have bad credit. Maybe you went through a tough time, a divorce, and, you know, you were doing your best to keep your bills up, and it's not that you couldn't make the payments, but once they would go through and look at your credit, you might not qualify underneath the level that most banks do. It doesn't mean that you should never be able to own your home, and this would give people an opportunity that they don't have. And Madam Chair, we have another part, because you know how it is. You don't even have to have a committee meeting before some things have a baby along the way, and this bill has, which I'm very happy with, and I'm going to go ahead and explain it to you, but then we also, like you say, have Ms. Walsh on the phone, and I want to say thank you to her for bringing this other opportunity that, again, we didn't know that existed. So currently, Alaska law requires local nonprofit organizations that originate mortgage loans to hold mortgage lending and mortgage loan originator licenses. State statutes are more restrictive than federal law. I want to say that again. State statutes are more restrictive than federal law, which is a hardship on nonprofits by imposing state-required licensing expenses that could otherwise be used to serve their communities. Exempting bona fide nonprofit organizations from obtaining these licenses would eliminate the financial burden they experience in helping to serve their communities. Bona fide nonprofit organizations assist Alaska homeowners with down payment assistance. They are not lenders, but nonprofit organizations that have a small mortgage lending line of business that make mortgage loans favorable to the borrower for a public or charitable purpose. Some offer zero or low interest loans to low to moderate income home buyers to assist with the purchase of their home. These organizations struggle with adequate funding, and allowing this exemption will reduce the expenses required to conduct mortgage loan activity for Alaska consumers. HB 104 now would exempt nonprofit organizations who are currently disadvantaged by certain mortgage lending laws. And Ms. Walsh would be able to tell you specifically what organizations that she has found that need this exemption. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Ms. Walsh, would you like to tell us what organizations need these exemptions?
Yes, for the record.
And please identify yourself for the record.
Yes, this is Patrice Walsh with the Division of Banking and Securities. And I am the director. And thank you, Madam Chairman. The nonprofits that would fall under this exemption are...
Are you talking on a speakerphone? Ms. Walsh, you're kind of breaking up. Can you talk on a regular...
Is this better?
Yes, it is.
Okay, I just took you off speaker.
All right.
So the type of nonprofits that would be affected by this new exemption would be Habitat for Humanity, Alaska Community Development Corporation, Fairbanks Neighborhood Housing Services, Rural Alaska Community Action Program, Alaska Benthus Capital, and there are some other ones as well, but they do, you know, just a couple loans a year, and as Representative Wilson mentioned, they are for products that are not offered by your traditional lenders. So they would be for low interest, no down payment, those sort of services.
All right. Thank you. Do we have any questions for the maker of this bill or for Ms. Walsh? Representative Hannon.
Thank you. Through the chair, for Ms. Walsh. So currently, and I'll just use Habitat for Humanity, the problem, can you re-explain the problem that is it that currently Habitat for Humanity would have to have a licensed mortgage lender on staff to do the lending, or are they in violation of the state law and we've now become aware of it?
Representative Hannon, through the chair. Right now, Habitat for Humanity would need a license as both a lender and also their mortgage loan originator who would work with them would also need a license. Habitat for Humanity is not licensed right now. They have done their contract through Cook Inlet Lending Center because of this situation. However, the other institutions that I mentioned, they all have the license and they have to spend amount of money every year to get their license and then to also have their licensed as a loan originator as well. And that can be a lot of money for a nonprofit.
Yes, go ahead.
Chair. Do you, I certainly support this idea and concept. Do you have any idea historically why we created that in statute? How's it compare to how other states allow nonprofit organizations like you've described to be able to do that same kind of work?
Yes, Representative Hannon, through the chair. Right now, federal law allows for these nonprofit exemptions, and that law became effective in a final rule in 2011. And Alaska just has never revised their law to accommodate this exemption that is allowed under the federal law now. Alaska did a revision in 2010 to the mortgage lending law. However, at that time, this was not incorporated into that.
Great. Thank you.
Any further questions for either Representative Wilson or Ms. Walsh? Well, hearing no questions, I'm going to announce that amendments are due no later than Monday, April 29th at noon.
Thank you.
And so we have one further item on the agenda, and that is HB 68, Labor Standards Safety Worker Compensation. This is our second hearing on HB 68. And we have a proposed committee substitute before us. Representative Stutes, may I have a motion?
Yes, Chair Ledoux, you may. I move that Labor and Commerce Committee adopt the committee substitute for House Bill 68, Work Order Number 31-GH1049/M as a working document.
And I'm going to object for purposes of discussion and have my committee aide, Deneen Tuck, explain the changes.
We have the change.
Okay, this is Deneen Tuck, committee aide for Labor and Commerce, and Representative Ledoux's staff. House Bill 68 had a three-year sunset added on to it in several sections.
Any questions? Representative Hannon.
Thank you, through the chair. Why? Why have we added a sunset to it?
If it does not work joining the two departments together, then in 3 years, the departments will go back to singular.
And there's been some concern raised that this might not be a wonderful idea, or it might be a wonderful idea. And so a sunset allows the experiment. And yet if it doesn't work out as hoped for, then we go back to the present system. Thank you, Ms. Tuck. So it is my understanding that Kathy Munoz, Deputy Commissioner with the Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development, and Gray Mitchell, Division Director of Labor and Workforce Development, are here to answer any questions about the bill, including the committee substitute. So do we have any questions from the committee? No questions?
Well, I'm going to ask a question.
Oh, Representative Hannon.
So the original House, through the chair, House Bill 68 originated at the request of the governor. Could I ask why there wasn't a sunset in that originally? And is that the only change from the department's perspective between the original and the committee substitute we're working from?
The CS before you has the sunset, the three-year sunset, and that is the only change from the original bill. And the idea for the division merger came within the department to the governor's office, and the governor supported going forward with legislation.
Representative Hannon.
And through the chair, does the department have any objection to the sunset? Because it's...
You know, we will be back in a couple of years to carry another bill through the process. It's more work, obviously, but we're willing to... work with you and address the concerns and prove that I think the merger will be very successful, and we will have that opportunity to come back and talk to you about it again in 2 or 3 years.
Thank you.
Any further questions or comments? So just a brief at ease. Representative Stutes.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 68-31-GH1049/M from committee with attached fiscal notes.
And individual recommendations.
And individual recommendations. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Seeing no objection, that bill moves from committee. As a reminder, if you have any amendments on HB 29, insurance coverage for telehealth, Representative Sponholz's bill, those amendments are due no later than noon Saturday, April 27th. That concludes our meeting for the day. Our next meeting will be on Monday, April 29th at 3:15. It is 4:03, and we stand adjourned.
Wow, we zipped through that.